My name's Claire Campbell, and I am a founder at Prickly Thistle, a weaving mill just north of Inverness, the only weaving mill on the mainland Highland region. And we have our own store, Rebel Row, here in the capital, Inverness.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined by Claire on this Growth for Good podcast, the very first one. So it's fantastic to be getting a disruptor, an entrepreneur, a person who's grown quality through manufacturing, who's in retail, who's kind of done it all and is known across the Highlands. So thank you for taking your time to join us today.
Gosh, the honour is all mine, Drew. First is worst. Do you know that?
I'm sure it'll be best in a long time. Claire, I think there'll be, I said that people know you, but obviously there'll be a lot of people who might not know you. So yeah. Let's just start with who you are. Where did you come from, and what's your origin story?
Oh, my origin.
Your superhero origin story.
Oh gosh, now you put me on the spot. I haven't rehearsed anything. Well, you know, I came from this planet. No, born in Inverness, mm-hmm. but yeah, born here and lived here my whole life. Went away for mm-hmm. a few years to study accounting and finance. So I went off and became a chartered accountant, which I practiced for 13 years, both in industry and in professional practice. And then kind of, yeah, reached my mid-30s and kind of questioned a little bit about, you know, what's it all about? So profound in my mid-30s maybe. But yeah, and I just embarked, you know, it seems so crazy now, the last 6 years, that I can't actually remember sometimes why I'm doing what I'm doing, but I can. People often say to me, so what made you want to start?
And so what did you
I know I need to come up with something. Yeah. You know, maybe year 10 I will, but it was a head and heart thing. I'd learned so much from so many amazing business people across the region, and I just wanted to kind of maybe, I suppose, experiment with cultures. And maybe there was that corporate rebel in me in mm-hmm. terms of understanding how models and how things could be done differently. But in particular with tartan, what fascinated me then and does now, and with other things going on, is that tartan is so iconic to Scotland and the Highlands. Oh, and it dawned on me how there was no mills in the mainland region at all. I thought, gosh, you know, having worked as an accountant, seeing industries like oil and gas and tourism, food and drink, services, all flourish. And then, gosh, you know, whiskey, we have all these icons, but there was just no manufacturing anymore. Mm. So, yeah, I just kind of thought mid-30s, now's a good time. The kids were still relatively small, but not too small to let dad do more. And so it was a good time to actually do it. I didn't feel like I was putting the family under too much pressure by going off and doing this.
It was a good time to do it, you say, but it's quite a dramatic shift.
Yeah.
To change. I mean, you know, no experience in manufacturing.
Nope.
No experience in, you know, the trade, as it were.
Nope.
So you must have made a decision to just go for it. And I know you can't say why, but just want to press you on your motivation for making that change. It's very bold.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome is, it's only just the 6 years that I've actually feel like I'm qualified. Mm-hmm. I've earned my stripes. But yeah, what really pushed me was, you know, I was in a particular role and I love working hard. I love making mm-hmm. a difference. I love solving problems. And I've had the pleasure of doing that with some brilliant teams and brilliant people in the Highlands. And yeah, and I just had this itch to maybe just, you know, lead a little bit more myself and mm-hmm. finance, you know, you're very much, you know, that's your role. As an accountant, I was always fascinated with operations. Mm-hmm. So I was more in the guts of things rather than the classic maybe bean counter role, shall mm-hmm. we say. So that itch needed to be scratched. But then with tartan, and the bold move, shall we say, mad move, more like, was just going through personal experiences, which I'm sure you'll be able to relate mm-hmm. to, Drew, you know, when you realise how short life is, mm-hmm. when you lose someone mm-hmm. at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. It was the wrong time for them. And it has a profound effect on you. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, you know, for me, I was 21 when it happened mm-hmm. to me. So this was nearly 14 years later, mm-hmm. After I lost my brother. But it was always there. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably developing a bit of courage as well. Mm-hmm. I was very much a civil conformist as an accountant, which you need to be. And yeah, you realize how short life is, and you want to, you know, what is life all about? Mm. What will people remember you for? And there was just this desire to do something more than be a good accountant, maybe. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you know what that benefits gave to me and my family were incredible, but sometimes that means nothing. So yeah.
So you mentioned losing the imposter syndrome for the yeah. past 6 years, and understanding you could do it. If you could travel back in time and have a chat with yourself,
yeah,
about that imposter syndrome. Say you were 22, 23 year old.
Yeah.
What would you? It's impossible to do, but I suppose like me, you want to reach out to other people and say, you don't have to worry about some of the things you worry about. What would you say to that, the young Claire?
Oh, absolutely. And I think one thing is we're living a very different time.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, you know, with voices and movements and other people out there, there's more of a questioning of the why. You know, I feel I was part of the social formula where it was a lot more conforming through education and then professional, certainly fall into the professional world. It's very mm-hmm. regimental, shall we say. But I think there's definitely with, you know, just taking the last 5 years, 4 years from COVID to our global connectivity, to people's awareness around political matters and the whole ripple effects of all of that. I feel like people, I think if I was 20 now, I would maybe be thinking differently anyway, as opposed to somebody in the noughties when it was a different time. All we had was the millennium, and we were all worried about the millennium bug, what that was going to do to the world. So I don't know if I would travel back. Maybe I would travel back and say, make sure they don't invent XYZ digital. Make sure they don't make mobile phones into like these computers that will dominate your life. You know, screen times 20 hours a day. I would probably uninvent something if I could go back and tell myself to do that. Yeah. Just go and sabotage some of these things that are so bad.
But from a point of view of, you know, encouraging people to kind of strike out and do something different, what do you think would be the key things that you'd want to pass on?
I think it's, you know, one is it will be scary. You will be super tired. You will be anxious. You will be frustrated. But just ask, you know, build a group around you. And no question is a silly question. You know, try and share your emotions. I was bad for that. It's just like, how's everything today? Everything's great. You know, we're getting there. But inside you're like, oh, you know, type thing. But you just put this, oh, we're getting there.
And we do say, take all the help you can get.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And just reaching out. And it did happen a lot for me in the beginning. There was, you know, I just developed the brass neck and I would just ask people, yourself being one of them who helped me as well. Yeah. But it was, so asking more. And I think, you know, and failure is, you know, in this country, I think failure is kind of like, oh gosh, you know, it didn't work. There's a stigma. It's negative. Mm. But there's so many, it's not failure. It's just that it didn't work at that time. So I think embracing that a little bit more, that nothing ventured, nothing gained, and just being, you know, there's so much to learn from things going wrong. Yeah. And when you realize that's the case, and I think Spotify is accountant, nothing could go wrong because that was your job. You know, there was, you do not get that account wrong. You do not get that tax wrong. You know, so I was programmed, no failure. And where I say actually failing's actually good.
It's okay to go out and get a few things wrong. And actually we probably should have a bit more forgiveness for things going
completely.
Wrong. Learning, as long as people learn lessons, then move on from that. So, you know, you found your place. It's been a bit of a journey in the past 6 years. Can you just tell us about where you've kind of come from and where it is now?
Yeah, well, okay, as you say, I didn't have a clue about weaving or designing or making clothes or anything. But we went from we did crowdfunding, which failed. The first one failed. My first failure was in the beginning. You know, we did this crowdfunding campaign to bring back weaving to the Isle of Skull, hugely ambitious, thinking we'd have to build a mill to do it. So a huge capital project. At that time, you speak to people about, you know, like, why would you set up a mill?
Yeah.
You know, do the money laundering app, you know, this kind of thing. There was the Skyscanner success. So, you know, you got to think about tech. And so it was a challenging notion and the first one failed, but we went back with a plan B. So, starting from nothing to then going down to the borders, finding 100-year-old looms, not all 100 years old, but one of them's 1929, not even knowing if actually everything was there. I mean, how naive, not naive, but trusting, which is a good thing. And I think that's something I would say to people is that, you know, it's good to trust as well. Not everything works out, but always go in with full trust. Buying this equipment, putting on the back of two flatbed trailers and the back of lorries, moving all this equipment up here, didn't know how to switch them on, didn't have anyone who could help work these machines because most of the industry have moved to the more modern, digitized versions. So 6 years ago, just kind of thought, well, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. We'll find someone.
Yeah.
I managed to find someone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 6.5 years on, there's a team of 14. We became the first B Corp certified mill. We've become much braver in who we are and who we're not, and how we communicate that, and how we communicate that, what channels and what have you. But yeah, so 6 years on, we're now into not just trying to bring the weaving of tartan home as a small mill. We now have this desire to bring an industry home for the people of the Highlands, which is where we're at now.
I want to ask you about that in a minute.
Yeah.
You mentioned B Corp there. Everybody, for those people listening, might not know what B Corp accreditation is.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us what, because it's about values and how you run your business.
Absolutely. I think, you know, B Corp was kind of more of a kind of born in the USA. So Patagonia is a big brand that most people have heard of. And Yvon Chouinard, most recently, a couple of years ago, gave all his, put all his shares into trust. But really, it's about this phrase of, you know, people and planet before profit, donut economics, that kind of thing. And what I really liked about that particular certification, as opposed to maybe other pain display ones, and I learned this from reading a lot about Yvon Chouinard and his story and how he, you know, built his organization and the culture, you know, Let My People Go Surfing, wonderful book. Read lots of books, everybody. Books are great. Quotes are brilliant because you just take 2 seconds. So B Corp, I found that. And we found that within a year of starting the mill. And what I really liked about that, so one is it's just good ethics.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a good business. And I know there's questions out there about B Corp being, is it gaslighting? Is it greenwashing? You know, who can be B Corp? How are they a B Corp? But what I like to say to people is that there is a legal change to all of those businesses that sign up for that. And no business is perfect. You know, when we're in the business of creating, we're consuming. But it's all about the how, the who, the where, how often, etc. But the one thing about B Corp is that you legally change your founding document to say that you put people and planet for profit. So you're improving Companies Act 2006, which needs to change. And there's lobbying happening with the B Corp group on a sideline to get Companies Act 2006 changed.
There's a reason I wanted to ask about that, because my next question was about your own values.
Yeah.
And the values you bring to what you do, how you work with people that work with you, the products you make, the way you do business. Can you just tell us where they come from and what you feel is the most strongest one, the strongest one that runs through you?
I think it's my mum.
Yeah?
Yeah, my mum.
Family, it's about family, isn't it?
Yeah.
This whole journey, yeah.
No, my mum, you know, she always says the greatest gift in the world is the one that you give. I mean, she's just such a selfless person, and she's had such an incredible journey herself. When I look at her as a superhero in terms of what she's been able to absorb in her life and still be that loving, kind, patient person. So I think a lot comes from my mum and the discipline of working hard and being part of a team and, you know, trying to remain as humble as possible all the time. So I think, yeah, certainly from my mum's a huge influence on me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I met my husband when I was really, really young. And worked well together over 30 years.
So what would you say is your core value?
Core value.
I realize I'm putting you
on the spot, core value. You have to pick one. It's like a child, Drew. You can't pick one. I suppose it's being kind. Being kind. Yeah.
There are some great answers, I'm sure, to that question, but I can't think of a nicer one than being kind.
Yeah.
And, you know, that before we go on to talk about something that you're doing, which is exciting, I think that's one of the things about doing growth for good, is that you get to meet good people doing good things and doing good things with their businesses and organizations. So so for me, that hearing that word kind is a really good thing. And it's missing from business. It's missing from society a lot. And isn't it great that people are starting to use that in a business where you make a profit and you develop things and you're able to grow, but you can actually do it in a good way?
100%, I think, you know, and a lot of my corporate background was, you know, building, it's an investment deck, it's a corporate language, you know, and kind never featured in it. You know, to be able to sit there and talk about ethical margins and impact and kindness to your the people who work for you or the community nearby or the supply chain, I think taking that into that space now is going to be, you know, is going to be fundamental to a bigger, bigger change we're going to see for the next generation. So yeah, so kindness, you know, it's the most important, you know, P&L, put a value on it, then I'm glad that it's starting to kind of, really feature heavily in all those spaces.
So we are sitting here in your wonderful retail outlet in Union Street in Inverness, Rebel Row.
Yes.
Your business is Prickly Thistle.
Yep.
Yeah. You've got a great track record of doing what you've been doing up until now, but you're itching to do more. Tell me what's next for you.
Yeah, well, this is it. There was the epiphany, the kind of the why. So, and to say to other people as well, sometimes what you start out to do quite often is not what you end up doing. That is, you know, and I know people hear that all the time, or say it all the time, but yeah, it's, but you have to sometimes just go through all of those wrong directions, but it's lessons learned. But yeah, where we are today. So yeah, again, imposter syndrome, gaining a bit more courage myself, realizing that, you know, no place like home. I love the Highlands, and I was probably misguided a little bit, you know, because we listen to lots of people and it's good to listen to everyone, but you don't need to take everyone's advice. And I tried to follow everything that everyone told me, again, conforming accountant probably more than anything else. But it's, then I realized no place like home, and there was something really special about this region. And, you know, knowing the story of Tartan, and it can be very stereotyped, you know, there's the romantic side, there's the luxury side, you know, it can be quite exclusive. There's a lot of things about it that are maybe not the values we want for our cloth. But then you kind of take that in the context of where we are today for social justice and environmental justice. I just had this kind of epiphany of thinking, how could something that is a global icon could be a key to solving some acts of social and environmental justice for the Highlands, create a blueprint in our little region, which is loved the world over, but it's a blueprint that is going to be the best free open source franchise ever. And it's just bringing in that circular mindset, but driving equity in a different way from what has been the traditional last 100 years or so of how we develop growth and how we, you know, inspire people to do things. So yeah, so how that is manifesting. So right now, part one of the trilogy is that we have just announced that we want to, we are making a request of the governments, so both Holyrood and Westminster, is to create a Highland Tartan Act. And this is a I suppose a version 2.0 of the Harris Tweed Act, because it's quite fascinating. It was established in 1993 at a parliament before devolved governments that was really to protect the making of tweed in Harris. We make tweed all over the UK, Borders tweed, Yorkshire tweed, and really it was about recognising that if somebody wanted to buy tweed to give back to the community of Harris, they could do that in a very clear legal way. And I feel now, having been doing this for 6 years, Highland region has a role in the story of tartan, Highland dress being an obvious, you know, if I was in the courts, I would be arguing with lots of evidence as to why. But yeah, so we want to mirror what was established in 1993 in a slightly different government structure, but also learn from the Harris Tweed Act and how we can, you know, and do a kind of next version of it. But
and it's, why do you feel that's important? Why do you feel that's an important thing?
I mean, I feel, so one is, so some people will say, well, what would you do if you're the only mill in the mainland? And we do have a Weavers in Skye, which is part of Highland region, but we're the only one on the mainland of the Highland region. Why would you want that? And and so it's a great question. And one is recognizing all of the natural assets that are associated with the Highlands and how much of that is actually in the hands of the Highlanders. You know, and this goes to some of the land reform questions that we're seeing with regards to, you know, the work that Andy Whiteman's done. Large estates, we're looking at, you know, the green energy, renewable energy space, we're looking at the tourism space, you know, how much actually sits in the hands of Highlanders, you know, that that true equity. So it's maybe taking on some bigger principles than just the tartan side of things. So we're trying to show, you know, this belongs to the Highlanders and bringing back some of that long-term benefit to the hands rather than something come in, you know, do very, very well for 10, 20, 30 years and then just parachute back out again. So we want to take Tartan back to the Highlands for the Hansel Highlander, so it's not for profit, which is so fundamental to the blueprint. And by recognizing the Highland role, then you think, okay, this is a huge global market in terms of this cloth in all different spheres. If you could bring a slightly bigger percentage of that global market to this region as a seed funding vehicle, there are so many more things around the fabric of our region, the fabric of the planet, that could be done. It starts to bring, you know, that base capital that I think Highlanders, that's all they need to go off and show how super creative they can be. And this is, you know, for some people, it's a bit like, what are you talking about? I'll talk about wind turbines, I'll talk about a coat, and I'll talk about a car, and I'll talk about wool. It can be quite overwhelming, but natural fibres can be shared from one industry to another over a 100-year lifetime.
And what kind of response, you've been telling people about this, what kind of response have you had?
Everyone's, one is, so many people go, I can't believe it doesn't already exist, because it is so iconic to the Highland region.
And why do you feel it hasn't been brought forward before?
Do I want to say that on here? I mean, why? And I think, well, you know, it does go back to the Culloden, you know, and the clearances and the suppression of the Highlands, because the industry, you know, anything banned becomes super cool as soon as the bans lift. Lifted. So it was banned in 1746, repealed in 1782. And, you know, there were some, you know, very entrepreneurial minds that recognized the value of this, and it became very central belt focused in Scotland. So the industry mushroomed massively across the central belt. Highlanders, we've created the diaspora, you know, there were so many of us out there. So the industry never ever got a chance to actually come home. And I don't think it ever really had. I mean, we had Hunter's Gibraltar for a long period of time, certainly, in terms of tweed and everything that they were doing. But that was pretty much it. So I think there was no one to fight the cause, because really, why would somebody in another region, and I have spoken to people in other regions who are weavers, to explain the reason and rationale.
There's no threat.
But maybe there was a perceived threat. Then, you know, actually, if we recognize this as something as Highland, then but we want to make it here. Why would somebody else from another region do that? But I think there is a respect and understanding as to why we're asking for it now.
Because people can make tweed, but it's just not Harris tweed.
Absolutely. Yeah. People can make tartan. So it's just
you're talking
Highland.
About Highland tartan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And everyone I've spoken to over the last 6 months, in the industry in particular, is making them aware of where we're coming from, because we don't want to be, we want the global market in the Highlands, and we want to make every kilt on the planet in the Highlands. We want to be able just to use a little bit of the income that is, you know, is directed into that space. And some people might think it's Highland, but they can do that now. We can use that for other things.
So you were saying, you know, people were saying, why hasn't this not happened before?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a bit of a groundswell behind the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. One is, why does it not exist? And then immediately, how exciting, how amazing to bring it back. You know, nearly 300 years ago, it was banned. It was referred to as Highland garb. And there's all the different technicalities around tartan wasn't banned. That is for sure. But the wearing of tartan in particular, look, shall we say, was banned. But yeah, everyone's really excited at this notion of actually this is part of our cultural identity. We're an Indigenous community in the Highlands. Then, yeah, bringing it home is really quite exciting.
And there must be enormous potential.
I mean, we've just, I mean, gosh, I talk for Scotland, as you know, as you know, Drew.
Well, it's quite good when you're doing the podcast.
Spoken to everyone, you know, as many people as possible, lots of stakeholders who'd be involved in this. And, you know, both in the Highlands and Scotland, across the UK, internationally, and just letting people know what we're trying to do. But yeah, you know, everyone's just been so supportive. And I think, you know, take aside the tartan, the Highland, the story, the films, all that kind of stuff. The principles of giving back, going back to the greatest gift in the world is to give, my mum always says, is that we're giving, no matter where we are in the world, we recognise now that we've maybe taken things from people we shouldn't have. And this is, you know, this is a big movement over the next few decades, I think, where we recognise, you know, we have to give things back. And it feels good to do that. And everyone actually does win from that. So yeah.
So for people who want to get behind this, what's your call to action?
Oh, yes. So plug the website. Yeah. The not-for-profit website is set up. So the trust is going to be called Highland Kyme Gian Trust. So hcdtrust.org is where the website is. And this is where we're just really simply building a mailing list of people who want to know more about us, the trilogy, you know, it starts to reveal itself as part two and part three. But what we've launched just recently is just this concept of an angel of reparation, right, working with a local artist who is displaying his amazing work in our store just now, Michael Forbes, who's created an angel that's been woven onto, embroidered onto tartan that we've woven. Mm-hmm. And the inspiration for that came from an iconic building in this region called Fort George, which was built off the back of the band, and it was there to suppress the Gaelic language bagpipes and Highland dress. So this angel featured in this window, and this angel is playing the bagpipes wrapped in tartan. They were clearly having a bit of a joke at that point when they put this in the window of the fortress. But it's allowed it.
Lovely where you've turned that around.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is the angel that was built there to ensure that these things never survived. And actually, she could be the one that brings it all back, which is so amazing. So that's launched. So with Michael, these patches will be available for pre-order in January. And we're just saying to everyone, help us bring a little bit of funding together for legal work, for the research, for much bigger things as well, certainly, but also for everyone around the world who thinks, oh gosh, I thought my kilt came from the Highlands. Mm-hmm. I thought my blanket came because it said Highland whatever on it, marketing. I really want to give back to the Highland region. So this is a way of them buying something that then, once they've sewn that onto that garment or that kilt or the Vivian Westwood coat or whatever it is, they can have this kind of sense of, rebellion. They've given back to the community, but they've got this identifier to say that, they were one of the ones that helped support it. So that will all launch in January. Mm-hmm. Also in January, we'll be giving part two of what's happening after
that. Interesting. So we have to come back and do another.
Absolutely. There's another two podcasts to go.
And we'll catch up on how things are going with the act and everything from there. If you had one kind of opportunity to do something other than the Tartan Act just now, what would it be?
Oh, right now? Oh, gosh, that's a really good question as well. I think what I've enjoyed right now more than anything is having, and I've been blessed to kind of have a global awareness in my professional work and, companies with subsidiaries and in the beginning of Prickly Thistle, I felt like we needed to get on the road and sell tartan to the world. I have really just enjoyed coming home, and you realise actually, gosh, it is a bit of a Dorothy from the Wizard of Oz type thing, and there is no place like home. Mm-hmm. And the world has become smaller, and we can do so much global positive impact and still be at home. And I think that's, so this whole kind of coming home thing, I definitely am so glad I've done. And I didn't do for this Tartan Act idea. It came to me actually having taken time to be at home. And I think that's, the grass is never greener. And there's just something really special about something that feels like home to you.
And I'm just going to finish on that bit there, but that bit about being home, because one of the most important things in business is getting a wee bit of time to think.
Yeah.
About what you want to do, how you want to do it. And sometimes just taking that breather out, that wee bit of time can inspire you. And it's clearly happened in this case, hasn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It's, because you feel the pressure. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You need a bit of pressure to push yourself, because something that you could do in 6 months, if you didn't have the pressure, it could take 6 years. Then the one is you're always feeling like you're not getting there. But I could not agree more, saying to people to find time to actually reflect and be kind to yourself. Mm. That's another thing as well. You're pushing, you're doing something, really challenging, and it's taking up all your energy, and you're making sacrifices with your family and your friends and everything. Mm. But it's always remembering to be kind to yourself as well, because you need to keep that stamina, going for what your vision is. Well,
Claire, thank you for giving Growth for Good podcast a cracking start. It's been a pleasure as ever chatting with you. I think we'll get a lot of people interested in what you're doing around the Tartan Act and about the other things that are to come. Because, like I say, this is a three-part story. There's a trilogy coming here. So we're all excited about that. But for the moment, Thank you very much, and I'll do what I can, but the best luck to you and everybody who's involved with the venture.
Oh, well, thank you, Drew. I'm delighted. You're home and doing what you're doing, and yeah, count me in for spreading the word and helping where I can.
It's all growth for good. Thank you very much.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed this Growth for Good podcast. If you want to know more about Growth for Good and the businesses involved, then look up drewhendry.scott or go to Drew Hendry on LinkedIn. You can also find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.